Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again. Time for the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. I'm your host, Sam DeMarco, here with the Elephant in the Room. And I'm here joined in studio, as usual, by trusty executive director, John Schnader, and our producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy, the man who makes all the magic happen and gets what we're saying here to you, our listeners. I'm also very excited because we have a great show today. You know, we talk about a lot of different things. We try to introduce different guests and talk about different topics. But I'm joined today by what I would characterize as the future. And when I say the future, I'm talking about our future leaders, you know, our younger conservative and young Republicans. And, you know, we're joined in studio today, thankfully, by two of them. We have Michael Sipper, who's the CEO and the founder of the Academic Republicans of Pittsburgh and the campaign coordinator for the Pitt College Republicans. Now, Michael's a triple major in economics, political science, and international studies with a minor in Turkish. It's not like setting the bar, you know, too high, is it? Huh? He's from Richland Township. He's one of the youngest in this region to earn Eagle Scout. He's the youngest board member of the National Eagle Scout Association of Pittsburgh. He began his career working for Rob McCurry, who's our state rep currently running for Congress, and is a legislative intern in 2022 and has worked throughout the local GOP since. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. We're also joined, we have Adam Mailer here. Adam is the Chief Operating Officer of the Academic Republicans of Pittsburgh and Fundraising Director for the Pitt College Republicans. He and I will have a lot to talk about here. He's also a political science and pre-law. Oh my gosh, it's a, you know what, that's like candidate 101, John, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? He's from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, the other side of the state. And he's a member of the University of Pittsburgh men's swim team. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, listen, I, guys, we could just jump right into it, right?
Absolutely.
One of the things the Republican Party has always, I don't say suffered from, okay, but it seems that it's a tendency. You've heard the old saying, right? They say if you're not a liberal at 19, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative at 40, you have no brain, okay? And we've always struggled, I think, to connect many times with our younger voters. And that's, you know, cost us dearly in a number of elections. So to be able to talk to the two of you to sort of get your viewpoint and understanding of what folks in your age group, you know, folks, you know, coming up today are looking for in candidates or for platforms or things like that are things that we're very excited about. So, hey, you know, I'll start with you, Michael. So, sure. You know, tell us a little bit about the Pitt College Republicans.
Right. So the Pitt College Republicans, it is a group that has grown substantially within the past year. It grew from about just 5 members, a very small group, if you will, to about 60 members. We have expanded it substantially. And a big contributor to this was the Michael Knowles event. What occurred at the Michael Knowles event, in essence, there actually was an improvised explosive device that was actually thrown at the venue due to the staunch opposition of some of the crazy people on campus to the speaker, Michael Knowles. So in essence, what occurred after that, what our president, Dylan Mitchell, likes to say is that this kind of was the beginning, the new beginning of the College Republicans at Pitt, because this actually provided more of a platform, I would say, to get their message out there, that there actually are Republicans on campus. I'll never forget the fact that there was somebody that came up to one of our tablings and they said, I never even knew that there actually was a College Republican group on campus. I thought I was the only Republican on campus. So it really comes to show you how isolated everything was, but I'm just so fortunate now that the message is getting out there. And I'm also really appreciative of Dylan for expanding some of the officer roles because we have accomplished so much. And as we'll get into it later, we actually founded the Academic Republicans of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Adam, Dylan, an individual named Jesse Milston, and I, we all founded that all together pretty much as a way to just continue our conservative activism and to really expand our outreach. Actually work more with different campuses throughout the area, and that way we can keep the Republican Party going forward.
Well, that's fantastic. Adam, what do you have to add in regards to this?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say that, like, when it comes to being a conservative on campus, it can be pretty tough sometimes. You know, you feel like you're the only person. I come from a background where I grew up Republican. I started getting into politics when I was about 14, and just when you see the younger generation, like, my friends around me, a lot of us, you know, aren't really into that. You know, there's not a lot of enthusiasm to really go get into politics because a lot of what's going on in the world doesn't really affect you. So when you look at what goes on campus, everyone's a Democrat because all their friends are. You know, people aren't Republicans because their friends are Republican usually. They're Republicans because they want to be, because there's an issue that really appeals to them. You know, when it comes to what the college Republicans are doing, I mean, a lot of our mission is just showing that there are Republicans on campus, really just providing that outreach to the communities and giving a platform for conservative ideas and, you know, Republican values.
Well, that's awesome. I can tell you that, you know, I have been a friend to many of the college Republicans at Pitt in the past. I've helped contribute, you know, when they brought in Ben Shapiro, I helped contribute a number of different events, because I want you guys to be able to hear, you know, from the folks that our younger generation does get excited and enthused about, you know, and like Ben Shapiro is one, Michael Knowles is another, okay? And I've also pushed back on the university when they would try to exercise a heckler's veto by trying to charge excessive security fees on the speakers that you wanted to bring in as a way to stop events from occurring. And the only reason that security was needed was because of the outrageous behavior of the folks on the left. And I use the term heckler's veto, but essentially that's what it is. You know, it gives somebody else the opportunity, you know, to be able to take and stifle your free speech rights and the ability to hear from whomever you want to hear. And you know, I mean, I could tell you that, you know, here, not only if I supported like the Ben Shapiro, the Michael Knowles, but I've never sent anybody out to organize protests when they brought Bill Ayers or any of these other folks in, okay? Because again, I believe that that's what college is all about. It's about the free exchange of ideas and allowing that vigorous debate and discussion to be able to help folks come to a realization over what will work and what won't, you know? So I can't tell you how much I'm excited about you guys being here, and I'm looking forward to this conversation we have today to learn more about the things that energize and excite, you know, folks in your age group. Now, Michael, you started to talk about the Academic Republicans of Pittsburgh. Tell us about that.
Yes, absolutely. So in essence, this was pretty much Adam and I's major idea. So when I took over as campaign coordinator, or when I was elected as campaign coordinator at the College Republicans, something I recognized was that we were not cohesive at all throughout the region. We had no contact with CMU, Point Park, Carlo, all these other universities throughout the area that could have garnished so much more attention towards our events. That way it would be more attractive to have speakers come in so they're not speaking to an empty room, of course. So pretty much what I did was I established a 501c4 alongside Adam and Dylan as well. And what we wanted to do was, in essence, unite all of these different conservative movements together throughout the college level. And we didn't want to just limit it to undergraduate students. We also wanted to focus on graduate students, students in law school, of course, as well. That way, we can actually have a broader base. And we also wanted to include any professors that may have been conservatives. That way, they can actually serve as mentors and help out some of these young conservatives that want to get involved. Additionally, I was, I would say, pretty well connected within the local GOP, so I really wanted to share my resources as well. One of the first events that I helped host was actually have Rob Mercury come in and speak, and we also pitched the idea to him, and he absolutely loves it, and he would be very willing to help us out in any way he can, is what he said, and we are so appreciative of Rob for that. And the general consensus throughout the Republican Party is that they are just so enthralled to see that young conservatives and young Republicans are out there willing to actually make change, because I don't see anybody else doing this. I don't see anybody else with such passion trying to unite everybody together. That way we can all succeed. Because just recently we had a call with someone from the McCormick team, and they said, well, what sits you out from the rest? And I just said, well, no one else is doing this. And he said, there are about 95 other organizations. And I said, well, you know what? Our goal is to hopefully try and unite all of them. That way we can actually have some more cohesion in the party.
No, it's and that's fantastic. Now, you mentioned reaching out to professors as well.
Yes.
They may be able to serve as mentors. How's that coming?
So it's been coming along, I would say, rather uniquely. There is one professor who is actually the advisor for our club of the College Republicans. So she is one that is, I wouldn't say willing to help just yet, but a lot of them are very preoccupied with their own academic endeavors, of course, and a lot of them are really hyper-fixated on research. But for the most part, I am confident that we will have at least some professors help us out. I do know that Jeremy Schaefer, I mean, he is a professor at Carnegie Mellon. I feel like he definitely can be helpful in the future as well. But I'm certain that we will have at least some sort of professor support in the future.
No, well, I'm looking forward to that. Now, mm-hmm. one of the things, like I said, we talk about a disconnect, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you folks, Michael, how old are you?
I'm only 19.
19. Adam?
23.
23, okay. I'm 65, mm-hmm. okay? So the things that, when I look at from a policy perspective, the things that are important to me, you know, because I'm at a different stage in my life, aren't necessarily the things that are important to folks in your age group, right? And I think that's where this is a disconnect, and we need to take and find a way in the Republican Party to really be able to speak broadly to an entire swath of people. Now, we do try to do when we talk about freedom, you know, and liberty, when we talk about the Constitution, we talk about the Bill of Rights, we talk about all these different things. But, you know, it's hard to compete with Santa Claus, which is basically what the Democratic Party is today, mm-hmm. when they just try to promise you, you know, money. They're plundering the public purse. I was, Chandy Chapman from WTAE, a local television station, did a mm-hmm. interview last week, and she came to talk, and this was, she wanted to ask about Joe Biden's latest move, you know, regarding a, what he called student loan, and I put in my air quotation marks, folks, forgive this program, because there is no such thing as forgiving the loan. You're just shifting the, on the person that has to pay for it, okay? And I told her that I thought that it, you know, that it wasn't fair to all the people that didn't go to college and things like that. But where I thought Republicans were missing the boat was that Democrats recognize that the high cost of higher education is difficult, you know, for many, and it presents a burden on many of the folks who have these student loans. But I thought Republicans were missing the boat because, you know, if I were in charge, I'd be calling the chancellors and the presidents of these universities in and demanding to know why does education cost so much, okay? Because when you just try to address and give away $10,000 off of someone's student loan, mm-hmm. you're not addressing the cost of higher education. You're not making it easier to afford for the folks coming tomorrow and the year after that and the year after that, right? So you're not actually solving a problem. You're throwing money, you know, at things, and you're forcing, you know, waitresses and bartenders or, you know, people that are, and I just use those two, you know, clerical folks, janitors, people that that never went to school or went to college, plumbers, you know, tradespeople, to have to pay for the education of folks that did, so many of whom have student loan debt today, which were graduate students. So help me understand, how do folks on campus, how do you guys look at this Student Loan Forgiveness Act that the Biden administration is trying to sell, to buy votes?
Well, I mean, it's a bribe. I mean, that's what it is. And if you look at it, it's a really bad one. But student loan forgiveness is sort of the, you know, the Democrats have sort of two issues that they try and monopolize for the younger generation. One is the abortion issue, and the other is sort of student loans. The climate issue is falling by the wayside. They need something that's going to prop up the youth vote for them. And that issue for them is student loans. And if Biden can promise something that he's never going to be able to deliver on, I mean, Nancy Pelosi was the one who said the president cannot unilaterally forgive student loan debt. Mm-hmm. They know that they can't do it. What they're trying to do is offer you something that they then that then has to get rejected by the courts, which right now is a majority conservative. And they're going to campaign on that, saying we need more people so that we can get court justices so that we can forgive your debt. And what they neglect to find is that, you know, if they forgive $10,000 in student loan debt for, I believe it's up to $40 billion, the overall cost of education is going to skyrocket exactly. over the next few years. And I think Republicans have one half of the issue covered right now, which is we're very good at seeing what the problems with the policy is, but I don't think we've been great at proposing our own policies. One policy that I think fits within the Republican agenda that we can capitalize on isn't student loan forgiveness, but it's peeling back the government control over student loans. What I think Republicans need to get on is this idea that the universities are responsible for the loans. If you go to college and you spend, right now I have $90,000 in student loan debt. I'm about to go to law school. I'm expecting to come out with nearly $200,000 in student loans. It's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Hopefully a law degree pays it off, and I'm glad that lawyers still get paid well. I'm sure some people aren't, but that aside, if someone goes to college and gets a degree in liberal dance theory or gender studies,
right,
which by all the measures, unless you get rehired by some university, pays no money, and half the universities still pay no money, you don't get anything out of it. So the university that gave you that degree, that promised that you were going to make money if you went and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this useless degree, they should be on the hook for that. And then the colleges are going to make smarter decisions. They're going to roll back their costs because guess what? All of a sudden, you have students defaulting on bad debt to the and the colleges are on the hook for it. I think that that's the solution that conservatives should be striving for.
Yeah, right now, the colleges have no skin in the game. You know, they're sitting on $1 billion. I think Pitt's endowment is like, it was $5.6 billion a couple of years ago. It's probably over six now, okay? They have no skin in the game. You know, if someone fails to graduate with a degree, if someone takes and picks, you know, a study area or a major, such as you said, like gender theory or whatever it may be, there's no real future, you know, for employment outside of another, you know, school or university or things like that. So they don't have the ability to pay the student loans back. And then when we talked about these things, anytime government distorts the market, and that's essentially what they're doing by taking and saying, we're going to forgive $10,000, tuition's just going to continue to increase. You know, and one of the things that I tried to do years ago, and I don't want to pick on Pitt because I attended University of Pittsburgh myself, but try to find out how many people are employed there. You can find out how many students there are, and they'll talk about in the neighborhood of 34,000 undergraduate and graduate students a little bit. Try to find out how many people are employed there, you know, because it's an astounding amount. So when you look and you see, like from an administrative standpoint, how many people, you know, work for a university that have nothing to do with teaching, okay? You look at the cost of these DEI groups. Thankfully in Florida, Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, you know, told the University of Florida, you got to get rid of it. But we have these at all these universities. And some of the things, I haven't seen one for Pitt, but I have seen things like for Michigan and Ohio State where it's in the millions of dollars that are being spent for this, right? So there's so much waste there. And I guess the whole thing here is we need to find a way to make higher education more affordable for the folks that want it. Now, that doesn't mean, look, if you want the full brick and mortar experience, you know, you want to go to college, you want to live on campus, you want all of that, great. Then there's a cost for that, okay? But if your intent is just to get an education, so that you can go out and get a good job, you know, whether in computer science, whatever it may be, right? And you're willing to do work online, things like that. There's got to be a considerable discount there to allow you to get, you know, your degree at an affordable price. And we're not there yet. And I believe it's because we're not putting the pressure on these universities to adapt. I mean, in business, you have to adapt every day, or you can fail to exist. And we seem to be protecting our higher education institutions and not bringing them in and saying, look, we recognize the importance of the institution and the role that you play in educating our society. However, you know, if you're going to help fund it with tax dollars and you want to rely on those tax dollars, you're going to have to be more accountable and more efficient. I don't see that happening today.
I don't see that either, but I do want to add one caveat that I think is actually incredibly important is actually the significance of community colleges and how helpful they can be. I myself, throughout high school, I took college and high school courses at the Community College of Allegheny County and worked my way up to an associate's degree that knocked out pretty much every single general education requirement that was necessary at the University of Pittsburgh. So it all worked out incredibly well, and I started off pretty much as a first-year junior at the University of Pittsburgh, so I was able to knock off 2 whole years.
Your parents have got to be so proud of you, Michael.
They are.
I mean, that's phenomenal. Now, but see, things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I got out of the Marine Corps and was going to community college, there were a lot of credits that the University of Pittsburgh wouldn't accept, weren't transferable. So a lot of things have changed in the interim to make, you know, college in some ways more affordable. And I'm glad that that's taken place. And I hope it continues. So help us understand, what are the things that are important to you? You know, now, Adam, when you were talking about, you know, the kids today, you were talking about, you know, that climate change wasn't as important, that folks were looking for the Democrats were looking for other ways to sort of buy votes, okay? And what are the things that you see? Well, I guess you said abortion was a big issue, okay?
Yeah, I mean, the abortion issue is a tough one because, well, especially after Dobbs, I think right now, especially in the Republican Party, there's a big messaging issue. Before Dobbs, you didn't need to have a great messaging on the policies because all of your messaging really had to be focused at getting the court to change its mind. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Republicans have made a great shift for that. And Democrats never had to change their messaging because their messaging has always been, we want abortion, you know, up until birth forever and, you know, no end.
Right.
And Republicans really never picked up on, we need to shift our messaging. It was a huge issue in the 2022 election. I still don't think I've forgiven Lindsey Graham for coming out and saying that we should make it a national issue.
High five, my friend. Yes.
Yeah. And you look at Pennsylvania. Listen, we are a purple state right now. We could flip either direction, and most of that flip is going to depend on how we decide to message on abortion. I think for all my personal opinions, I think Trump is taking the middle road right now. He's taking a moderate stance that could help him in those purple states. And even in Pennsylvania, where it's going to be a close election this time, it could help. You know, you need to know what your community is going to do. Mastriano made the mistake in 22 to make abortion a major issue, and that cost him the election. He was sunk by August. If you look at the donation data, if you look at how he was spending, he was out by August, and that drug us down another Senate seat. So you have to be careful on some of those issues with the youth, because the reality is that we're not in, you know, we're not in the workforce. We're not paying taxes by and large. You know, some people might have a minimum wage job or a good internship, mm-hmm. which is paying them some money, but they're not seeing those massive tax clawbacks that, you know, like you said, by 40 years old, you're looking at it and you're saying, oh, well, yeah, the Republicans have much better tax policy. I'm going to vote for the guys who aren't taking my paycheck every week.
Right.
So at the end of the day, yeah, there are the issue is that the Democrats are harping on these issues that rarely affect the youth, but are very popular.
Well, I think, you know, you guys being out of here at University of Pittsburgh, and we're in Pennsylvania, all Dobbs did was say that there wasn't in the United States Constitution, you know, enshrined a right to abortion, okay? Mm-hmm. And they referred it back to the states for their own laws. Well, here in Pennsylvania, I mean, abortion is settled law, and it's not under threat, you know? Earlier this week, France put into their constitution mm-hmm. the right to an abortion, and you have a lot of folks on the left that were applauding that, right? But they didn't realize it was only for 14 weeks, okay? you know, here, we have the ability to be able to just say, like, guys, this is Pennsylvania. You know, abortion is settled law. You have the right and access to it. Okay. And if you're a candidate and you're saying, I'm not looking to rock the boat or to change that, I'm going there to take and pass laws and to work on the other problems that we have in life to try to address it. You know, I want to talk more about this in the second segment. We're running out of time in the first segment here. But I mean, I think it's only as big an issue as we make it. But when you talk about messaging, I think Republicans, we fail to understand, for most women, they don't, if you try to talk to them about the Democrats being extreme because they want abortion all the way up until birth, okay? They completely, they disregard that because they believe that no rational woman would ever get an abortion in late term unless it was for the health of the mother or for something of that nature, right? Or a fatal fetal anomaly. So, you know, when we try to talk about that message, they just completely disregard it. They also don't want to listen to us talk, you know, men talk about a number of weeks, okay? Because again, Democrats do such a much better job on this because they say, they call it women's health care, they talk about women's rights, and they say that no one should get between a woman and the doctor, okay? Hey, agree. But there are things that we can do. We can push for over-the-counter contraception. We can push for IVF. You know, so that people that are looking to become parents, there's a lot of things that we can do that are positive without coming across as looking to ban something. Because when you use the term pro-life, to us, it means that, hey, you know, we're for promotion of life. We believe in the sanctity of life. But the way, what they hear is that we're for banning it with no exceptions. And that's not the case at all. You know, when you say, hey, you know, you already have, it's settled law here. You know, and you can say, I support abortion in the case of rape, incest, or the life of the mother. Okay? That's a reasonable position. And I think our candidates, instead of running away from the issue, need to just come out and tell people where they stand so that their opponents aren't able to paint them in a box, you know, and the public is able to pick and choose based upon that stance. Folks, we're going to have to take a break right now, and we'll be right back. This is Sam DeMarco, the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM. Welcome back, folks, to the Elephant in the Room. This is Sam DeMarco, your host, and joined in studio by two of our local college Republicans and also members of the Academic Republicans of Pittsburgh. We have Michael Sipper and Adam Mailer in the room, and we were talking in the last segment about a lot of things, but we left this right before the break. We were talking about abortion, and I was explaining, or Adam giving you my take on it, that you know, here in Pennsylvania, you know, it's settled law. You know, you have women have the right to access up to 24 weeks, and then you have exceptions for rape, incest, you know, life of the mother. So I don't see, this shouldn't be as big an issue on the minds of voters here today, you know, when we talk about young voters, when we talk about women voters, as it seems to be. So, Adam, you were saying, you were gesturing before the break that you had some things you wanted to add.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, with the Dobbs decision, we were talking about how, you know, this, the decision didn't go to, this is a national decision that needs to be made at the, you know, U.S., the federal government level. This is something that gets decided within the states. Right now, Pennsylvania is 24-week abortion access. And one of the things I was talking to you about before is that, you know, for people who might be pro-life, there's a difference in the messaging between before the Dobbs decision and what needs to happen after. One of the things that we're trying to do with TARP is the organizations we're trying to bring in aren't just the College Republicans organizations. We actually also want to bring in our pro-life groups on campuses because we know that these are groups that are more disposed to being Republicans because this is because the abortion issue is such a Republican favored issue. Mm-hmm. And we actually want to help these people get out and start doing grassroots activism so that they can start making the changes where Pennsylvania might eventually, where you can change the hearts and minds of people, that Pennsylvania might actually become a more pro-life state. Like, you know, we're not going to sit down and push for, you know, a specific action. But, you know, every person whose mind gets changed, who comes around to believing that even the unborn are children, you know, in the eyes of God and, mm-hmm. you know, under and should be children under the law. You know, we don't want people to sit down who don't believe that and tell them you can't do this. We want those people to come around and actually believe that these are children. And when that happens, then you can make policy changes. But until then, there's, you know, Pennsylvania is going to be 24 weeks until you change people's minds. And well, I think, you need the messaging and the grassroots to do that.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, listen, they already are children mm-hmm. in the eyes of the law. And that's why if a woman is killed, a pregnant woman is killed in an automobile accident, you know, the charges for vehicular homicide will be for two. Mm-hmm. You know, or in any type of a, you know, crime. But I think, I mean, folks, the electorate isn't there yet, right? And I think we need to respect that so we can have our personal opinions. But if we're going to go and we're going to run for office and we want to be lawmakers, I think that we need to bring, you need to lead, but you need to bring folks along. And that's why you recognize what you can do today. And that's why I believe things like, you know, pushing contraceptive and making that more accessible, you know, women, you know, these sorts of things, maybe putting up a bill that says, hey, in the state of Pennsylvania, you know, any woman who is considering an abortion, but whose health insurance won't pay for a sonogram, the state of Pennsylvania will pay for it. Okay. I mean, all of these things that we can do to support women and support mothers without them feeling that we're trying to take and get between them, and their doctors and what is ultimately a very difficult decision. So, you know, Michael, I think you wanted to add some things.
No, I completely agree with everything that was just said. And going back to over what was said during the break, it was real interesting whenever the Dobbs decision came out and individuals were saying, this is an absolute stain on democracy. This is absolutely a complete overstepping of the Supreme Court, of our democracy, all these interesting talking points, even though we are a constitutional republic, but also the fact that this is yielding the decision to the states, thus making it a far more democratic process, of course. So I did find that relatively interesting. And something I also wanted to include back again is religion and the religious factor of what we're doing here with TARP as well. We also do like working with some of the more religious groups throughout the campuses, because what you see is that more and more of these people, that whether they be Catholic, Jewish, even the Muslims as well, you find that a lot of them have incredibly, I wouldn't say incredibly, but they have conservative backgrounds for the most part due to their religious affiliations. And that was also another facet that I wanted to focus on regarding the Republican Party and the Muslim vote. But I will say a considerable amount of Muslims that I know do have incredibly conservative backgrounds. And in fact, there's one that I know, actually two that I know, one that attends Pitt and one that attends CMU. They both have pretty high positions within the Islamic community, especially on campus, and they're Republicans, but they are absolutely afraid to speak out against it. And a big reason why is because the term Republican gets almost automatically affiliated with Israel within these groups. So that's, I just find it pretty interesting, because when you actually look at their core values, you look at pretty much everything that is mentioned throughout the Quran, they're pretty much adhering to a relatively conservative stream of thought. And I just find it relatively interesting that the Republican Party hasn't been, I would say, more receptive towards the Muslim vote. Now, I do understand everything that has occurred in the past. Let's not beat around the bush what occurred with Bush, but it's just very compelling to me.
Well, I think, I mean, you see that also with the Hispanic community.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Hispanic community, you know, many folks thought, we believe Democrats thought, that they were going to come and allow a lot of folks from Latin America, you know, to come into the United States, and that these would automatically be Democrat voters. Mm-hmm. And I think, sad to say, that many of these people have strong religious and faith beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, and also they believe in the family, mm-hmm. the strength of the family. These are core conservative values, okay? So you see a lot of those folks, you know, also tending to trend or vote more Republican, at least much more so than the media would have you believe. Now, in the first segment, we talked, and you talked about the growth in the Pitt College Republicans and up to 60 members. And for me, like, that's phenomenal. Okay? That is fantastic news. But recently, I was told, you know, that it's every generation looks to rebel in some way against their parents and things like that and the establishment. Someone said to me that being a Republican, you know, on college campuses today is the new form of rebellion, the new rebel. Any truth to that?
I would say absolutely it is. And for the most part, what I like mentioning is John Maynard Keynes's spirit or animal spirits, which is really just herd mentality. Mm-hmm. And something I've noticed throughout campus is that there's just this herd mentality that you almost have to be a Democrat or you have to subscribe to neoliberal thought. And if you don't, you're going to be absolutely scrutinized. People are pretty much going to mark you as some sort of lunatic or somebody that they're just going to affiliate you with some absolutely extremist position that is usually on the far right and not that one that doesn't really resonate with the rest of the Republican Party. So it's almost like having a target on your back, to say the least. It's very unfortunate. But well, we're trying to change that with TARP, of course, changing the culture.
What are you guys doing as far as outreach? Because that's the biggest thing when you talk about this. So many people have preconceived opinions or notions of, you know, what being a Republican or being conservative mm-hmm. is on campus. And you talked about the herd mentality, and I absolutely believe it. I see it in action every day, you know, with so many folks that are Democrats. And I mean, we just had earlier this week at Allegheny County Council, we had 279 people signed up to speak on behalf of a ceasefire resolution in Gaza. And, you know, while I respect because I represent everyone in this county as the at-large county council. Well, I respect everyone's ability to have an opinion. I was astounded by the ignorance of some that were so sure in what it was that they were saying, but couldn't be more wrong or further from the truth. And I mean, we had people coming up there, like claiming like that October 7th didn't happen. We had people claiming that, you know, babies weren't beheaded, that women weren't raped, you know, despite all the evidence, the fact that Hamas was videotaping this, you were streaming it, you on their cameras all over the place, right? But I had folks that were coming and telling me this. I made in my comments, I talked about the reason why I would not support that resolution and I voted no on it was because it didn't mention Hamas at all. You know, it talked about Palestine and there isn't a sovereign state. It referenced hostages in both Gaza and Israel. There's not hostages in Israel. I mean, it couldn't be further from the truth, but I brought up and I said, all of you speakers have talked about the 30,000 casualties in Gaza. Haven't mentioned how many of those were terrorists and members of Hamas, and they were laughing. These folks were like laughing that I mean, this is the insanity. And we had members of our Jewish community that came out and spoke, and I mean, it was roughly almost two-thirds of the speakers were in support of the resolution, but it was organized resistance. It's the fringe far left, you know, this political activism, and they don't take rejection well. You know, we allowed them to speak and didn't interrupt them. They didn't bother to give us the same courtesy, you know. But this is what we're dealing with right now. It's absolutely crazy. So, you know, I think we have to have respect for all of our neighbors, you know, Muslim, Jew, Hispanic, you know, every ethnic group. But we also have to live in the real world and recognize, you know, what's true and what's not. And for some of these folks, there is certainly a disconnect. So enough of my speech, folks. So guys, if someone wanted to help your group, if we have some young people that are listening to this show today that would want to get involved, you know, with the Academic Republicans of Pittsburgh, with TARP, how would they go about doing so?
Well, it's rather simplistic. All you have to do is go to our website. It's tarpgh.org. And we are also on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, pretty much all of the major social media sites. But focus on our website, and all you have to do is hit the membership button. And just from there, all you have to do is fill out your first name, last name, and your email. That way, we'll get back in contact with you, and we'll see what sort of events we can get you to help us out at. What we like doing the most, in particular, is door knocking and canvassing throughout the area for prospective candidates. Thus far, we have done it for Rob Mercury, who is running for U.S. House in the Pennsylvania 17th Congressional District. We had about 15 of us out there from the College Republicans group, and we also had about 17 for Frank LaRose for U.S. Senate in Ohio. Mm-hmm. So we already have a very formidable group of dedicated students that are willing to cut out their entire Saturday to knock doors for a candidate that they truly believe in, and we hope that we can have substantially more come out and join us. Because at the end of the day, you can have a PAC give you $10,000 to put out a creative ad for a candidate. But if you actually have at least 10 to 15 people that are dedicated to knock doors for a candidate, it really shows much more determination and grit and just a greater respect for the candidate and the willingness for the Republican candidate to win.
Well, I'm going to have to connect you folks with the Dave McCormick for Senate campaign.
Oh, we already are.
Okay, great. Because... And Dave, we'll appreciate your help, as well as all of our other candidates. And I think, you know, one of the things we want to do is it's so important that as we're going out there and we're knocking doors, we're knocking on doors on behalf of our candidate, but also the slate. It's about getting our voters to the polls, you know, and with the mail-in ballots, what are you seeing on campus? How are the kids, how are the folks your age, how are they voting today?
I think pretty much everyone here, at least at Pitt, it can be a little bit different than other campuses. I had to transfer a couple times, so I've seen this process at least twice now. But when all the mail-in balloting rules changed, a lot of things changed across campuses. It became much more accessible for students to vote, which might, you know, you don't generally think about the student population as being either a big or a small voting bloc. You don't really think about them at all sometimes. But the reality is that mail-in voting made it so that students have a larger impact in elections than we used to think. Now, at Pitt, because of where Allegheny County is situated and how the seats drop, a lot of people will sometimes register at their student address, and then they will go to the campus. The campus will have voting booths set up on election day to vote at. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them now will get mail-in ballots and send them home if they're in close district races. So my recommendation for any young Republicans listening out there who are on a college campus or who are thinking about college, look at the races in your area As a Republican, for me, I am in a, I wouldn't say super contested, but it's a closer district across the state, being from Wilkes-Barre. And I can make a bigger impact with my vote there than I can in what's a relatively blue part of Pittsburgh that I live in right now.
Well, I think it's that's one of the important things here. But it's also, you know, Allegheny County, we're home to 9 colleges and universities, including when we include CCAC, the Community College of Allegheny County. So we have a tremendous number of students, you know, that come in and out of here on a regular basis. And I think part of the education efforts that you folks should be educating folks on campus about is that you can only vote in one location. Mm-hmm. You know, if you choose to vote here, you forego the ability to vote, you know, where you're from, if you're an out-of-town, you know, out-of-town or out-of-state student. Because it's one of the things, electoral integrity is mm-hmm. something that we're all concerned about. And Adam, you were absolutely right. I used to always laugh because Democrats would come in and they'd bring in Bruce Springsteen, John Bon Jovi. You know, they bring in the rock stars or the celebrities. And the kids would come out on campus to listen to them play a song or hear them and things like that. But they didn't get out of bed on election day to go and vote. Well, now they don't have to, because with mail-in ballots, you know, they're able to, I understand, hold social events and things like that
yes.
on campus where folks fill out their ballots and turn them in or whatever. What are you guys seeing?
Yeah, well, this isn't particularly ballots, but I know this was signatures in order to actually get on the ballot for some okay. of the Democratic candidates. And it was so simplistic for them. All they did was just sit in the, I believe it's the William Pitt Union. It could have been
student
outside.
Student Union, okay.
Yeah, the Student yep. Union. Or it could have been outside, you know, so they won't have any sort of issues there. But they were able to accrue, I believe, over 1,000 different signatures for a candidate, or a couple of candidates, actually, throughout that specific area. Now, I do want to say one way that we sort of counter this with TARP, especially whenever we do door knocking and helping people actually register to mm-hmm. vote, but just specifically focusing on the door knocking aspect, what we like to do is actually address multiple candidates within the same region at once. This is just far more practical, as we can actually get the word out there. So for example, when we knock for Rob, and let's say we are in Beaver County, that also means we're knocking for Roman Kozak, who's running for state house there.
Right.
And it also means that we're knocking for Dave McCormick for U.S. Senate.
And see, that's what I believe. We're knocking to get the Republican voter out to vote, mm-hmm. because the chances are if they come out to vote, they'll vote for the slate.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's critical. Mm-hmm. And I've been a big proponent of the mail-in ballots, not because, you know, I love these things, but because they're a method by which we're able to vote here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And we're allowing Democrats, we're ceding the battlefield to them by allowing them to use them without contesting it for up to 50 days before an election. You know, and essentially, every election is like a 100-yard race, and we're giving them a 50-yard head start. You know, we can't hope to win. We can't hope to win if we wake up on election day and we're down, you know, 550,000, 650,000 ballots. So we have to compete. And it's changing the mindset of Republican voters out there who say, well, no, I only vote on election day. I got that. You can tell me that. But I also have the data in front of me that shows me that all of you don't.
Right.
Right? And that things get in the way, and we recognize it. I mean, for every inch of snow, it depresses turnout by 1%. For every inch of rain, it depresses turnout by 0.5%. You know, people, life gets in the way.
Right.
Some of them, their kid gets sick, their car breaks down, they have to go out of town for work, and a whole range of things. If you look at the last presidential election, and even the midterms, you get reports from different areas about problems with machines, running out of ballots, all these different things. And voting by mail, you avoid all of those problems. And voting by mail in Pennsylvania is different than in some of these other states. So when you hear President Trump going out and saying, you know, don't vote by mail, it's written, blah, blah, blah. He's talking about places where they send out ballots to every single person that's registered on the voter rolls. Okay, and we know voter rolls aren't always kept up to date. And it's because of the challenge. Here in Allegheny County, if I were able to wave a magic wand and make the voter rolls 100% up to date at this moment, by the time our show was over, they would probably be out of, and that they would probably be inaccurate, because we lose approximately 15,300 people die every year in Allegheny County. There are approximately, on average, 126,000 real estate transactions every year in Allegheny County. Now, those aren't all, you know, all moves out, okay? But they're transfer deed transfers. So some of them are moves in, some of them are moves out, some of them are just refinancing. But my point is, there's a tremendous number. Look at the, like I said, we have 9 colleges and universities here in Allegheny County. Every year, they're graduating a class. How many of those folks go elsewhere, you know, to seek their future? So it's very difficult to take and keep these rules up to date, although elections tries to do the best they can. But in Pennsylvania, you also, when you request a mail-in ballot, you have to submit the last four digits of your Social Security number or your Pennsylvania driver's license number. That's the closest form we have to voter ID in this Commonwealth, okay? So folks, again, you may not like the rules, but they are what they are. We need to use them if we can win, in order to win. Because if we can't win, we can't govern. If we can't govern, we can't change to give you what you would like to see. So we have to work at this. Yes, Adam.
I was going to say, one thing that I really enjoy about the Pennsylvania mail-in ballot system is that if you're someone who you don't trust the Postal Service for one reason or another to get your ballot to the election office on time, even if it got there late, they do have to count it. But if that's a concern for you, mailing the ballot, you can, for those 50 days before the election, go and hand deliver your ballot to your county board of elections office. And there you'll get a QR code or some kind of code. They will hand it to you. And you can check online and see all the boxes that you voted for and see that they turned it in. So you have 50 days. So don't think about it as there's one election day in Pennsylvania. There are 50 election days all the way up until November. And on all of those days, you can go in person and cast your vote. All you have to do is request the mail-in ballot, and you go and hand deliver it to the County Board of Elections office.
Yeah, well, and also, even if you don't have the mail-in ballot, you have the ability to go down to your county elections office during those 50 days of early voting and apply for the mail-in ballot right there. You have the ability to fill it out and be able to submit it right there. So it's essentially like voting over the counter. You know, the ballots will then be kept, and then they'll only be opened on election day. But you have the ability to do this. So there's a whole range of things you can do. And, you know, in Allegheny County, we have, last 3 years, we have had one drop box, which was down at the county office building. And it was manned and only available during working hours, okay? And we had employees there, and we also provided, like, cones, so you didn't even have to park. You were able to pull up, hand your ballot, you know, to the employee. He would ask you a couple questions. Is this your ballot? Okay. And then would place it into the box. Now, last month, the county executive announced that she was going to take and institute five additional remote ballot drop-off locations. I'm filing suit to challenge that because she didn't disregard the process. You need to go through the Board of Elections. You can't just unilaterally do that on your own. And I think these people that are out there claiming about how they're fighting democracy should stop subverting it, okay, and follow the rules. And I'm doing everything I can to hold her accountable. So we only have like 3 minutes left. So I want to give you guys a chance to speak to our listeners and tell them what you believe is important. How can they reach younger voters, or how can they help you and your efforts? So, Michael, you were mentioning you have an event coming up here, a Turning Point event. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, absolutely. Turning Point at the University of Pittsburgh will be hosting Candace Owens on March 19th at 6 o'clock p.m. Special thank you to Liliana Orozco and Khalil Laraquente, President and Vice President of Turning Point at Pitt, for orchestrating this event. They're doing an amazing job.
If someone wanted to take and sign up for that, do you know where they would go? Should they just go to the Turning Point Action website and under events potentially to find it?
Yeah, it's there, but it's also easy to find on Instagram and Facebook as well, the Turning Point at Pitt. That way they have a direct link where you can sign up right then and there.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I don't want to take too much time away from that.
Adam, you got 2 minutes, my friend.
I really think that the main thing that people need to do to get across and reach out to the younger conservative voters is, again, and I harp on this a lot, I think it really needs to come down to messaging. We need to show young people a positive future. The Democrats keep promoting this down, everything's going wrong sense of the world. And we need, I think Republicans can make a better effort by promoting this, we are going to make things better. Not things are great. You don't need to tell people everything's going well. We know it's not going well. There's 8 million new illegal immigrants crossing the southern border. you know, gas prices keep going up and down because Joe Biden won't drill for oil in the Gulf. So what can we do? What can we promote to young people? What message can we show them? And I think that that's really going to be it. And also, in addition to that, showing young conservatives that there are other people out there who are like them, who think the same way, who have these ideals. So if you're interested in, you know, our organization, if you're interested in what we're doing, you can go to tarpgh.org, send us a message. We'd love to get in touch with you, and we'd like to help you get in touch with other people who think like you.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today on the show. I really appreciate it, and I hope our listeners take heed and reach out. I know I've learned a lot, and we'll be looking forward to working with both of you here and your organization as we move forward in 2024.
Absolutely.
Folks, thanks. That's it for the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM.